This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, Ashley St. Clair, I said to you when I walked in the room, when's the last time we saw each other? Because we both exist in this weird world where you don't know the last time you've seen someone because we see each other through screens all the time. But apparently we saw each other in real life. Was that pre-COVID?
So.
Was that pre-COVID? What has happened
post.
To the world?
I think it was
post. Oh, it was post-COVID?
Because you looked like you still had a Florida glow about you. So I think it was post-COVID.
The early Florida glow. Now it's subdued a little bit. Well, it's good to see you. I've mentioned you a bunch on the show, and we've shown a lot of things that you've done on social media because you're very much in the mix of kind of what's going on culturally and particularly on this immigration front. But for the people that have no idea who Ashley St. Clair is, who is Ashley St. Clair?
I am
And what is she doing here?
I came to see Dave, of course. I am Ashley St. Clair. I am a children's book author, the author of Elephants Are Not Birds. And I also work at the Babylon Bee. I help Seth with operations down there. I'm not paid to be funny since I'm a woman, but I am also currently working on a documentary on the war on women, on birth control, and the effects of birth control on women. But I really focus a lot on, I do independent journalism, so I've been on this border beat for a little bit, because I do believe anyone with a smartphone can report on what's going on. And since I do have a platform, I try to, when I'm in front of these issues, report on them. And a lot of the border stuff kind of fell into my lap, so I've been reporting on that beat. But I guess a little bit of a jack of all trades in some way.
Yeah, and you sometimes seem to just kind of step in it, so to speak, because one time you were traveling and you just happened to see some migrants at the Phoenix airport. We'll get to that in a little bit and we'll put up some of the pictures that you posted. But before we do any of this, you live in New York City.
I do.
You're here in Florida. What are you doing with your life?
Well, you know,
how's it going in New York?
You could ask the founding fathers that too. Look, I think the barbarians are at the gate, right, when it comes to these cities of ours that have so much history. And it does make me very sad that we give a lot of our cities that have so much history over to the leftists so willingly. For example, New York City, we didn't lose the governor's race by that much. Mm-hmm. The margin was very similar to the number of people who fled and left during COVID. And when I'm able to walk down the block and I'm able to go to the place that George Washington was rallying the troops, to me, it's really sad that we're abandoning that history while simultaneously crying about them tearing down the statues of our founding fathers while voluntarily giving up so much of our history. I do love New York. I think there's hope for it. But, you know, my family's there, too.
Yeah.
And so we like to say everyone should leave. And it's great that you can. And so many people can. But I have family there. I can't leave. And I hope that more people are optimistic about the future of New York. I hope more people fight for our cities that have that culture and history.
Do you see signs of optimism or is it just hope?
I do. I do think people are getting fed up. And what I think is really important is it's going to take more people like you who are more center or center right to speak up. Or even people who are a little bit center left, especially in the tech industry and these primarily leftist industries, speaking up and saying, hey, none of this is normal or okay. It's going to take normal people feeling empowered to speak up. Because when you have these one-on-one conversations with the mothers of New York or the parents in New York City, they are fed up. They don't think any of this is okay. Bipartisan, none of them think, you know, migrants flooding our city is okay. None of them think what's happening in our schools is okay. So I am optimistic that it could change should we be able to empower people to feel confident enough that they're not going to be canceled for wrong thing.
You got to have hope, I suppose,
yes.
would be the point. Yeah, yeah. I wish I saw more signs. I mean, I spent most of my adult life in New York City and I loved the city. And when I go back, it's very sad when I see what's going on in Midtown and the migrants and the homeless and the drugs and it's just lost that zest. But I admire someone willing to stay and fight. You're young. That's why.
Well, and you know, Midtown's become this epicenter of all of this ridiculousness. But outside of there, New York City's very big. These people do. They're seeing it. And I think that's why it's so important for people like you and I, or anybody who has a platform, to just speak out on what they're seeing. Because people, they're seeing what you and I are posting online. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the effects of these leftist policies on their city. So I think it's very important for us to speak out, and it is making an impact that sometimes we don't see.
So let's get to some of those things that we're posting online. So you were in the Phoenix airport, this is about 2 or 3 months ago or so, and you saw some things that you thought were a bit curious, and you posted some images, you took some videos, so we'll play some B-roll while you're explaining what happened there.
So I was leaving the Turning Point AmFest event, and at the Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, I was taking a late night red-eye flight. I believe it was 11 p.m. at night, and I've been down to the border several times. I've interviewed these migrants at the processing facilities, and the processing facilities are where, when you illegally cross the border, that's where Border Patrol will take you to be processed. Once you leave these facilities, you have a clear bag that has paperwork, your court dates, your any identification if you didn't bury or burn it at the border. And when I went to Phoenix Sky Harbor, I see at my flight, at my gate, an entire line, most of the flight, is full of migrants with these processing center bags. And the first thing that went through my head was my 2-year-old son. I said, because I know that so many of them are not properly screened medically. So I go and I ask a Delta rep. I said, are these people being screened medically? That was my only concern at the time. Mm-hmm. Because Delta's not going to be able to, you know, say, oh, well, you're not here legally, whatever.
Right.
You know, they're kind of taking orders. I was concerned, as a customer, are they screened medically? The Delta rep tells me, well, what do you care? There are people too. Would you like a mask?
Unbelievable.
And then they start following me around the airport. They follow me to another gate. I'm being followed by two people while these people who are entering our country illegally are boarding the flight. And so I took a 30-second video of what I had seen online and I posted it and it blew up. It was maybe 40 million views. And what was incredible to me is after I posted this, I found out that it's happening on every airline. Mm-hmm. And this is not unique. And then I found out I have all these pilots who are coming forward. And they're telling me, we have no idea who's boarding our flight.
Yeah.
So it really kind of uncovered. And because I already had a platform, people felt comfortable telling me this information. I was getting sent boarding passes that I could show you that say no name given from these major airline carriers. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, we have to do something about Delta. And then you find out it's all of them. It's mm-hmm. all of these major airline carriers are complicit in this. None of these pilots know who's boarding their planes. And they're all receiving vast amounts of money from these NGOs, these charities, who are flying these migrants all across the country.
So there's a lot there, but let's back up to something you said earlier, which is that you've been to the border and you've been to the processing facilities. And you also mentioned whether they bury or burn their IDs. That actually works to their advantage to do that, does it not? Because can you explain that a little bit?
So what happens is, and Ali Bradley is a fantastic border reporter who speaks on this a lot, but what they do is they will bury and burn their IDs at the border because, one, either they've claimed asylum somewhere else and they're not supposed to be claiming it here, or two, they don't want you knowing who they are. Mm-hmm. So when you go to the southern border, you will see this, buried and burned IDs, passports, IDs, previous asylum claims all across the border. That should be enough to concern us in itself. But then to board these flights, they don't have to have any ID, some of them. They're using arrest warrants. They're using, you know, appearances to show up to the court dates as their identification. So we don't know who they are.
What is happening at the processing facility? So they show, okay, you show up, you either have an ID or you don't. You're usually a male. We'll talk about that. Like, what percentage of the people that you saw there were what I always see is a lot of men that seem between 25 and 40. And where are the women? Where are the children? Where are the poor and the huddled masses with the one bag, the one suitcase? Like, where are our grandparents?
Well, you're not imagining that either. It doesn't seem that way. But it is that way. It is primarily military age men who are coming across. And I expected to see, I went in with an open mind. You know, you see all these stories from the left of the women and children and crying, and it was very sad to see those. There were some cases of that, but primarily military age men coming across from all over. Our border is an open border to the world. We've seen a 900 increase in Chinese nationals, mostly men. We're seeing an increase in people from the Middle East, from Africa, from all over, primarily men. But back to your question on what happens at these processing facilities, they cross the border. Border Patrol is literally helping them cut the barbed wire, lifting the barbed wire.
Yeah.
And they cross the border and they all gather in this spot and they're taken in a bus to the processing facilities. And they're saying, every single one of them is saying, we claim asylum, because they're told how to do this over in South America at these NGOs. So they claim asylum. They write down a sponsor, which most of the time is not real, or they list an NGO as a sponsor, and then they're left out. They're sent out. They know exactly which NGOs to go to. They're given court dates into the 2030s. Yeah. So, okay, well, you know, we'll figure it out in a decade from now.
Give us a call in 10 years.
Quite literally, yeah. Quite literally. Yeah. You know, you're looking at this paperwork. You see a guy in Texas. He's got a court date in Arizona in 5 years. Do you think he's showing up to that? Probably not. And then they know to go to the NGOs.
He's not even going to return their calls on his government-gifted phone. Yeah.
And then they go to these NGOs. And the NGOs give them free plane tickets to all over the country, to New York, to Texas, to wherever, from Arizona to Arizona to Colorado, all over the country they're being flown. And then we don't know what happens to them.
So who is there a difference between the type of person that is and that ends up going to the processing facility and just the guy that's just crossing and running in? Like, is there a difference in the
guys who run in are going to the processing facility?
Well, I assume some people just run in and then just run through Texas, right? I assume if you're crafty enough, you just get through and never have to deal with that nonsense.
So
just getting the free flight is nice, right?
Yeah. Prior to this increase in the asylum claims, they don't really have to show any proof of that they need asylum or refuge here to claim asylum. Many of these NGOs are coaching them. So it's actually more beneficial for them to claim asylum because they're given these benefits and court dates 5 years, 10 years out. So they want to do that. They want to come here and talk to Border Patrol. They are coming here and asking, where is Border Patrol? Where can I claim asylum? And when you speak to them, especially about the election, most of them will say thank you to Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. They're saying this on camera. They're saying, thank you. We came here because of Joe Biden. And so they very much are aware of these loopholes in the asylum system. And in my opinion, we have to have a moratorium or severe reform of this asylum, these asylum claims, not only here, but internationally. That's what's happening in Europe, too. Because remember, we're not alone in this. Europe is facing the same migrant crisis that we are, and for the same reason.
No, and we could end up with the demographic problems that Europe has, which are real, and it's uncomfortable to talk about, but is a reality. So, okay, so these people, they get through the processing plan, they hop on a plane, and then they basically just show up at a sanctuary city and they move into the Ritz and they get room service.
Oh, well, if it's New York, it's the Roosevelt. And, you know, they're staying there 6 months. They're getting room service. They're getting, you know, maid service.
They literally get maid service. I saw a video this morning that a woman speaking only in Spanish, who 10 years ago could have come to America and worked as a maid, now has someone who probably came here legally working as her maid.
Correct. Yes.
It's not a question. It's just bizarre.
Yes.
Yes. And you live in that city. So good luck. So good luck with all that. All right. So as you've exposed more of this stuff, and Elon has retweeted a whole bunch of your stuff that's helped elevate it, do you sense that people are waking up and that anything is going to happen? I mean, I think that's what it all boils down to now. Everyone just kind of thinks, oh, yeah, it's crazy, but no one's going to do anything about it.
I do. But I really think that the reckoning has to be international. Because again, this is not unique to the United States. I think it's going that there is a deliberate war on the West, and it's going to take a lot of Western countries coming together and say enough is enough. But I do think the spotlight being shown on it is helpful, and I wish more people would just go down to the border and take their phone out and show what's happening. Because, you know, I spoke years ago, if you ran on immigration in a Midwestern city, right, a local election, nobody's going to care because it didn't affect them. Mm. So you have to kind of bring it to their doorstep and say, no, I went down there. This really is happening. You have to show it to them. And I think saturating that market with this content and showing it and making it really hard to ignore is really important for it to be an issue that one issue voting should be immigration at this point.
Right. Well, I'm always focused on those center left people who are kind of waking up, especially, I think, since October 7th. I mean, you're in New York. There's a decent amount of those people. Do you think those moms at the park are finally going, all right, enough is enough? There's a crack addict on the merry-go-round?
Mm-hmm. I do. And especially post October 7th, and you see it coming down New York. It's the same folks who are marching down our streets in 2020 and throwing bricks through the windows and throwing bricks at my head. They're the same ones marching down the street and saying from the river to the sea. It is so far beyond the Israel issue. This is a political movement, first and foremost, against the West. And I don't think there's any other way to view that issue.
Do you think we haven't explained that properly? Like, people just see, they kind of look at the Hamas stuff and or the River to the Sea rallies and all this nonsense, and they're like, ah, that kind of feels like BLM, but it actually is the same thing.
Yes, it's the same people who are marching down the streets. It's the same people who are putting up black squares. It is the same rhetoric. And these people don't seem to care about any of these injustices that are happening all throughout the Middle East. You know, in other Islamic countries, they don't seem to care. For whatever reason, they only care when it's Israel. They care when it's the United States. Why is that? A lot of people didn't care about a lot of the injustices happening over in China, and none of these people are out protesting the Uyghur Muslims in the camps in China. None of these people are protesting the slaughtering of Nigerian Christians. Why is that? And I don't know that I have a good enough answer for that. And I've tried to stay as neutral as possible, but it's becoming much more difficult to do that with how blatant the targeting of the issue seems to be, with how they don't seem to care about these issues or these injustices when it's happening anywhere else or perpetuated by other people.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's much more complex than the oldest hatred is the newest hatred. Like, I just think it's basically that simple.
You and my mother would be on the same page.
We would be on the same, like, it's not much more complex than that, right? They don't care that there's actual apartheid in Jordan where Palestinians can't have certain jobs, or in Lebanon. But that kind of is what it is. Am I allowed to ask how old you are? Can you ask?
25.
You're 25. So how are you 25 and sane? Because insane. we're told that Gen Z is all insane. You're supposed to have purple hair. You're supposed to have genitals that don't match your body or something like that. How'd you do it?
I have hope for Gen Z. I think very early on, I went to a liberal school for a liberal arts degree. I went for philosophy and somehow didn't turn out a liberal because very early on.
How'd that happen?
Very early on, I saw something was wrong. I went for philosophy because you can see you're supposed to look at things open-minded in both sides of the issue. And as soon as I went to school, the heads of the philosophy department were starting petitions to ban speakers from campus, like Trump and others. And so immediately I was like, that doesn't add up. So I think I was able to save myself from a little bit of that by noticing it early on.
Are you sympathetic when you see the 22 to 28 year olds that have so lost it, that should be at the, you know, sort of young part of about to head into the prime of their lives?
Yeah.
And they're just so confused by so many things.
I'm
worried that the Earth is going to explode and everything
else. Yes. Yeah. So Abigail Schreier actually just came out with a fantastic book, Bad Therapy. And I don't know if she spoke about that locus of control. Mm-hmm. And so much of this Gen Z feels out of control.
Yeah.
They feel like they don't have anything to control. So it seems like they cling to these movements like Free Palestine, like the BLM, because they feel like it's something they can control and do, because there's so little impact they can have on so many different things. They're not empowered to say, hey, you as an individual, as long as you're just trying to be useful, that's enough. They're told the only way they can be useful is through these social justice causes. And so I think that's why they gravitate towards it more. But I do have hope that, you know, with people like Abigail who are drawing attention to, hey, we've really been lied to about your mental health, about what's going to be help you as an individual, maybe if they can get out of it. But I am concerned that this generation doesn't want to have kids even. You know, I did street interviews with Every Life, the diaper company. Mm-hmm. And speaking to these girls who are my age, who are saying, one outright told me she didn't want to have kids because of the environment, because of climate change.
Yeah, and, well, if AOC tells you the world's going to end in 12 years, which that was like 4 years ago, so...
Yes, or because of economics. They think the worst thing that could happen to a kid is being poor in America. And that historically, you're like, we've been through so much worse than being poor in America. Yeah. I promise you, kids have been through so much worse than being poor in America. And it's just such an antinatalist line that's been sold to them. And that, to me, is more damaging than some of these other lies. The fact that they are so unoptimistic, they are so dreadful about the future that they don't want there to be more humans, I think is really concerning. That's more concerning than that they just think, you know, climate change is a problem. They think it's such a problem and that humanity's so doomed that there shouldn't be more of it. That's really concerning.
Right. And you might also be willing to kill an awful lot of people to stop that from happening.
Correct.
Which would be a bit of a problem.
A little bit.
A little bit. Do you think it's worse in a way for girls than for guys right now? I mean, I know there's a separate set of issues, but girls seem to be under attack. Well, you know, I guess you could probably argue either. I was going to say girls seem to be under attack every which way, sports, blah, blah, blah. But young boys are under attack too.
And it depends on what metric you look at, right? Because if you tell that to one person, they're going to say, well, women are graduating college at a higher rate. It depends on what your metric for success is. But I think both young men and women are particularly disturbed nowadays. I think there's just really a war in identity, and that's where a lot of this gender stuff comes in. They're really exploiting that so many people have no sense of identity. They don't know who they are. And because they've destroyed that, you're not allowed to be a man anymore. Being masculine is bad. We pump little 9-year-old boys full of Ritalin and Adderall because being a young boy is disruptive.
Yeah.
Young girls, we're putting them on birth control as young as 12 years old. Pumping them full of hormones. And so I think we're fundamentally destroying what it means to be both a man and a woman. And it's become so divisive. There's this war of the sexes. Well, it's all women. If women just weren't so promiscuous, if men just weren't so this, instead of saying, hey, there's fundamentally a war on humanity.
Mm-hmm.
There is a subsection of the population of an elite class that's very anti-humanist. They don't like you whether you're a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably something we should focus on more. And it's not really perpetuated by one sex or the other.
Do you remember a time that things were normal? Most of my guys are, the guys that work here are like later 20s. And I always think it's kind of funny, like they'll be the last people to remember a sort of sane world or what I can remember as a sane world, because there was a sane world where none of this stuff was on the fringes and that's where it stayed and it was okay.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know that we're ever going to go back to that. I don't know that we can. I think we just have to adapt now, especially with the digital world. I don't know that there's ever turning that clock back.
Yeah. No, I don't think there is. I think there might be ways of working around it and having some pieces of it, but
yeah,
we're not bringing it back.
I think we need to teach people how to adapt to what we've created, because I don't know that we were made for so many inputs. And I think that's a lot of the issue with Gen Z too. I was speaking with a bunch of school teachers and they were saying, well, you know, all the kids have anxiety, all the kids have depression. It's like, okay, well, I kind of get it, right? We didn't grow up with everything that they're dealing with, all of these inputs all the time, being forced to perform all of the time for everybody. And you and I deal with that, having a platform, but these kids are dealing with it too. They're expected to be on social media at 8, 9 years old. They're expected to perform everything all the time for everybody.
Being locked in their house for 2 years probably didn't help either.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think we just need to come up with new solutions. And we've been trying to put old solutions to new problems. And I don't think it's working.
Yeah. What do you sense from the sort of Gen Z perspective about just politically that, you know, whether you happen to like Trump more or you like Biden or whatever, but it's just old people again, you know, McConnell's finally stepping down. Feinstein died at 180. It's like, these people lived in a world that was so profoundly different at 25 than what you're dealing with at 25. Like, it just, I can imagine that just makes no sense. It doesn't make sense to me
McConnell
at 47.
Does McConnell make sense to you?
Right. I don't think it makes most sense to most 80-year-olds, but like, here we are.
I think that's why they love people like AOC who are young and saying something new. It doesn't even matter if it's right. It's just new.
Well, it's not right.
But it's new.
Yeah.
And so I think the younger generation really just wants someone to say, this is not the world you grew up in. This is actually not the world our parents had at all. They're not going to be able to work the same way our parents did and own what our parents do. And so I think having, especially on the right, politicians who can come in and say, we get it. This world is totally different. And I'm not seeing that. There's this push to move towards traditionalism that existed in a world that doesn't exist today.
Mm-hmm.
And while there are good things about traditionalism, how much of that can you implement in this new world? I don't know that a lot of it's possible. I think we fundamentally changed a lot about human relationships and the way we all interact, that some of that just may not be possible anymore.
Wait, can you explain that a little bit more so for people that don't fully follow this? You're talking about like sort of this like trad movement that women should just basically be in the kitchen taking care of the kids.
Yes.
The husband should be out on the... And that is fine in certain contexts, obviously.
That's statistically.
It's more than fine, yeah.
Statistically, it's worked out
but
better.
But you're saying it sort of maybe can't scale in a new world. It's not going to work for everybody in the world.
I really don't don't think it's possible anymore. And, you know, statistically, yes, kids are better off with a mother and father and married and whatever. I just don't know that, especially dating. When you talk to these young kids, they're having such a hard time dating. Mm-hmm. Dating is a whole new world. We've introduced this world of unlimited options.
Yeah.
So everybody essentially has a buffet at their fingertips that they never had before. And I don't know that we're really able to move past that. When I speak to a lot of people about their relationship issues, that is kind of the issue. They're not able to settle down. Nobody wants to settle down. Nobody's content. It's like this
one more time.
It's this crop dusting of Peter Pan syndrome of not wanting to grow up, and there's always more. And so I haven't really heard anyone address that. It's just we're putting a round peg in a square hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the younger generation very much knows they are in a different world. And there are two options: are the people who are fundamentally insane and the people who won't. From the left, who are like, you know, this is, you know, infinite genders and this and that. And I think they know a lot of that's insane. But the other option is these people who won't accept that it's not the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And who want to just recycle these ideas that worked really well in the past. But they're not really reinventing them in a way that's going to be helpful for this new generation.
Right. What would that look like to you?
I don't know yet. I don't know. I guess it depends on the issue. But fundamentally, you have these politicians who are putting warning labels on cigarettes and not on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You have what happened with Gemini. Every politician should be up in arms about what happened with Gemini. This is the future for our kids.
Yeah.
Is this new world, this AI world. And instead, we have them, you know, just laughing that Kamala Harris is so stupid and she's the AI czar.
Yeah.
And they don't really understand the implications of that what AI means or what these companies are racing towards. That, to not have everyone focused on that or really any policies from the right on those issues, is going to lose us a lot over the course of time. Because it's almost like dinosaurs in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know, I spent a lot of time, obviously, in the last week talking about the Gemini situation. What I kept saying was, all these people online were shocked. They were like shocked that this is what Google Gemini is choking out. And I was like, how are you shocked? I'm shocked that you're shocked. Not that it gave back to us exactly what they've been giving us for 20 years. I'm shocked that you people didn't realize it. I mean, I suspect you probably were kind of on that train too.
Yeah, you saw the censorship web being weaved. You saw AI already censoring people. Most of the cases of censorship especially that we see on social media, it wasn't, you know, typically a Yoel Roth saying, I'm going to get him this time. It was a robot.
Right,
it was an algorithm. And nobody really stopped to think about the implications of that. It was just, you know, we need free speech for the sake of the Constitution. And while that's all well and good, I haven't seen a single person on the right talk about the implications for free speech as it relates to AI or AGI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important for this newer generation, because that's why it's going to be more important for them. Sure, we should hold the constitutional value of free speech. I do believe it's a God-given right. But what does a world without free speech look like in the age of the internet?
Right. So potentially in this new world, you could have your free speech, but once it's run through the AI machine, no one will know that you have your speech, in essence.
Yes. Essentially, your chains are going to be code.
Right.
And they're not talking about that. They don't even seem to think it's an issue. Like you said, they were so shocked at Gemini.
Yeah.
They were so shocked that an entire group of people was erased from the code. Well, what is it training off of? The internet.
Right. It's training. Right. It's the very people who got us into this problem, giving us the new products. And we're like, yes, take us to your digital health. Yes, Zuckerberg, I want to follow you into the metaverse. It's just so insane. And yet here we are.
And there's been no proposed legislation for these people who are allegedly having AI safety meetings all the time. There's been not a single senator.
Do you think that there would be legislation that would be? That's interesting to me, because to me, it's like these people have the government can't do anything. The government's going to regulate AI.
Them asking the TikTok CEO if TikTok uses Wi-Fi.
Is it right? You know? Right. Literally.
You're like, but that's what kids are seeing.
Yeah.
They're seeing these old farts asking if TikTok uses Wi-Fi.
Right.
And it's like, of course they're disconnected.
It does, right? It does, right? Did I get that right?
Okay. Of course they're disconnected. Of course they don't want to vote for these people. Of course they think Republicans are out of touch.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're seeing. Because that's what they're asking.
Right. So you're staying in New York, you're seeing mm-hmm. all of these problems, yet you're still seemingly happy and doing documentaries and all sorts of stuff. What's the doc about?
It's about birth control and the war on women. I think women have fundamentally been lied to. And despite us being more equal than ever on paper, there's a paradox of declining female happiness. And there's actually a really fantastic Yale study on this back when they were allowed to say these sorts of things back in 2008 yeah. about this paradox of declining female happiness. And especially as it relates to birth control, many women are put on it as young as 12, 13 years old. I was put on it at 14, not told the rest, not told that, hey, you might be depressed. Hey, it might increase your risk for suicide. None of that. They just put these young girls on it and they're on it for decades and they never get off. And for me and many women that I've spoken to, I have hundreds of stories from hundreds of women from all across the political aisle who said once they got off, they felt like they could think again. They had thought they were crazy for so long. And they're being pumped full of these hormones and your body's being told to stop doing its most essential biological function for years, for a decade, two decades. We're seeing so many women who are facing fertility issues. Once they finally try to have kids, they're having issues having kids after being on these pills for years. And so I truly believe that the left, so many things painted as progressive, are actually terribly regressive. They are telling women the only way to be equal is to be men and to repress being a woman, repress mm-hmm. your femininity. They're not teaching women, you know, you can cycle track and it can be just as effective as birth control if you're using birth control for the sake of birth control.
Right.
But there's women deserve informed consent on these issues. They should know that, hey, when I start this, I may become depressed. My risk for suicide may increase three times. That's an incredible amount and I think a lot of these young girls who have been through that, they deserve a voice and they deserve justice. And so that's what I'm hoping to do with this documentary. So I'm interviewing healthcare providers and women who have been on the pill. We're also showing how easy it is to get for a young girl. And they mm-hmm. don't do any mental health screenings. They're not asking if you have a history of mental illness or depression before you're put on this pill. That statistically, undoubtedly, nobody will deny this, even the left, that it increases your risk for depression and suicide significantly.
Well, I can see how this dovetails nicely with Abigail's new book, because basically her argument, or the case she's making, is that the entire psychiatric and psychological fields have failed an entire generation, and mm-hmm. now you're connecting that to literally what they're doing to their bodies.
Yes, and now you can order it online. You know, Obama made it free. You can get birth control free. It's like a right. Why is that a right? It's a helpful medication for some, but to have so many women on it, wide scale, mm-hmm. without informed
consent.
Why
are they usually, this may sound very naive, but I'm a guy.
It
so why are they putting so many 14-year-olds on it? It's to clear up their skin? Is that the idea?
Yes. This is the
crazy thing.
It's not just that. They treat birth control as this cure-all amazing pill because they know if you put girls on it young enough, they're not going to get off because guess what? Then they become sexually active.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, now it's risk-free sex and I should just stay on it. But it's for skin. It's for painful menstrual cycles, which aren't normal. Instead of telling them, hey, you know, there's other remedies for this. A painful menstrual cycle usually signals something else wrong, that you're not taking care of yourself in other ways. No, just take the pill and it'll go away. So it's acne, which when I looked back at photos of myself at 14, I'm like, that was like killing a mouse with a rocket launcher. You're like, why did they put me on this insane pill that I didn't get off of? And I started seeing a therapist that same year, just a couple months later, after starting this pill at 14 years old. And
then when you listen to Abigail talk about what the therapist was likely doing to you.
Yes, she told me I just need to tap to distract myself, tap on my wrist.
Is that right?
Yes. And so, you know, but
did that work?
No, it did not.
It didn't. I'm shocked.
It did not. But, you know, I didn't get off the pill either. So, but I talked to these girls and they all have the same story.
Where do you think feminism went wrong that it has led to this place that women are in such a bizarro place? And you have the loudest feminists who are cheering on the guys that are now dressed up as girls, wrestling women and choking them and dunking on them and all the other good stuff.
I wish that wasn't true. I wish everything you just
said
was
I wish
a
it
joke
wasn't true
and parody.
Either. Yeah. I'm joining the WNBA for this, actually. I'm going to be a 47-year-old woman with a torn ACL, and I'm going to score 30 points a game in the name of feminism.
I think where feminism went wrong was deleting the femme part. You know, telling women that, again, the only way you're equal is to destroy your femininity and to be a man. We need to work like men. We need to, you know, sleep with people like men. We need to become men to be equal in this world. And even when you look at like the corporate world, you guys are able to operate on 24-hour cycles and it works very well for you guys. We don't. We have totally different cycles. They're 28-day cycles. Everything is built around and for men. And that's something that they are right about in terms of a patriarchy, if you want to call it that. But instead of addressing that and say, you know, hey, women should do these things on these schedules and that's how they'll succeed the most. Mm. They're forcing women to be men and work the same way as men and work on the same schedules as them. To succeed instead of saying, hey, we're really different and we're going to succeed doing different things on different times in different ways.
It sort of blows my mind that people are so afraid of that because women are different and that's just fine. If you go to a hospital, probably 90-something percent of the nurses are women. Women are better caretakers. There are fundamental biological and evolutionary reasons for that. That's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Men usually are better at things. So they're underground doing a bunch of stuff that women generally wouldn't want to do. Right.
Yes. That's the age old comparison. It's like, well, you don't see many women signing up to be bricklayers.
Yeah. Right.
You know, because we don't want to do that. I don't want to be a plumber. I would much rather be a nurse.
Be a nurse. But what do you think that, so that's just society has just completely failed women in that regard. Like you're going to be the same damn thing. And it then puts them in jobs and in marriages that they don't really want to be in. And then they wonder why they're then drugged and everything else and depressed.
It's Marxism. They're, you know, we're all equal. There's no difference. We're all going to do the same job. It's very much a Marxist ideology that there is no difference. In the most egalitarian societies, women and men do the most different jobs.
Yeah. Yeah,
when
Sweden,
they actually have, yes, when they have that choice. And so I really think it's this push to just make us all one homogenous blob that just works for the machine harder. I mean, that's really equal is to tell us, I'm most equal when I get to work and sell my soul to the machine the same way those men did. That's not only that, they're going to pay for my abortion. They're going to pay for my birth control. They're going to pay for me to not have a family. Yeah. How is that equality? And we're eating that up. We're like, thank God, we're equal now.
Yeah, you know, there was a great study out of Sweden that you should probably look into for the doc, where they, because they have literally the most egalitarian society in the world in terms of parity between men and women, then they started, the social justice warriors started looking at their society and they were like, wait a minute, why do we have so many women that are nurses and why do we have so many men who are engineers? And then they started creating government programs to incentivize to flip that, and then people were upset. Because it's like they let human nature run its course and then they weren't happy with the outcome.
Yes. And it's this is what's crazy too. It's they want to be so divorced from the natural world. I mean, think about everything. We're already so divorced from the natural world, but they're really just trying to send that home and sit in the pod and eat the bugs and, you know, live in your VR headset. But we are almost completely divorced from the natural world. There's hardly anybody that's born on default settings at this point, you know? So I think that's really part of it. It's transhumanism to a really insane degree where they just want like the trans and not in, you know, transgender, but they just want to remove the human aspect of it and divorce us entirely from the natural world.
Where do you sense the Gen Zers are kind of spiritually at the moment? Because, you know, we can talk about the politics stuff all day and the psychological stuff and all that. I don't quite think that's exactly what the problem is, or maybe at least not what the solution is.
I think they are very spiritual. I think all humans are. Alan Watts always says humans are incapable of living without mythology or something higher than themselves. The issue is they've replaced God and religion with government or with these social justice causes or with themselves, to believe in yourself to the umpteenth degree, or this hyper consciousness of self, where they're just hyper fixated on the self. And that's become their religion. I think they're incredibly religious. It's just not a religion we've seen before, and one that has rather disastrous consequences and does not promote natalism or furthering humanity. It is just the hyper fixation of self.
So you're not very, that was kind of black-pilled right there. But yeah, you're not black-pilled though.
No.
It's not, yeah.
No, but I mean, I recognize that. But if they're able to have that much of a spiritual fixation on themselves, why are they doing that? They're doing that because they're sold that religion. They're told that's how they're going to be happy, is if they focus on themselves. Do what makes you happy. Express yourself. Do it all the time. They're sold that lie. They were sold something and they're buying into it, which means they can be sold something that's probably better for them.
Right. That's the challenge. So when you go to these events and you're talking to young women and things of that nature, you feel like they're kind of getting it?
Yes. I think there's a desire for women and men to be comfortable being women and men again. They very much want to, when you speak to these, even Gen Z girls, they are consuming in mass this content of women just staying at home and being homemakers. But that's become a dirty thing to say now. You can't say, I just want to stay home and raise kids. Mm-hmm. Even though that is one of the most important jobs you could ever do.
Yeah.
It's not easy to raise kids, but it's become a dirty thing for any young girl to say, I just want to be a mother. I want to raise kids. But you're seeing them show that a little in what they're consuming. And they're consuming this content at an astronomical rate of this homemaking content. And so I think if they're made to feel like it's okay to be women again, mm-hmm. that will be really instrumental in changing the course. Even when you take the issue of abortion, it's always fixated on the child. And we could get into, you know, who believes it's a baby, who doesn't. But nobody ever seems, especially on the right, to say, well, what is it doing to women? You're telling me this is a women's rights issue. This is one of the most fundamental women's rights issue that is going to shift the way the country is. It's a one-issue voting issue. Mm-hmm. And nobody's examining what it's doing to women. Nobody's talking about the increase of women being on psychiatric medication post-abortion. Nobody's talking about how a majority of women say they feel coerced by a partner to get an abortion. Nobody's talking about how so many women say they do it to make someone else happy. That to me is concerning messaging-wise, that it's people are...
What do you think the right could do better on that?
They should focus on what's happening to women. Women have been sold a lie. The women who are getting abortions, for the most part, are not evil murderers mm-hmm. because they don't believe in that premise. They're not bad people, many of them. And I think we need to stop the demonization of women who have been sold a really terrible lie. Mm-hmm. The right will agree that, yes, feminism is horrible and it's this horrible lie, but then they don't have any sympathy to the women who believed that lie.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's really important going forward to say, okay, what has abortion done to women? This is your women's rights issue? Sure, but should you shout your abortion? Is it really something you want to do? Is it something that we should be normalizing to this degree? I don't know. I think that's going to be really important. There should be a degree of sympathy.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because I've made a point lately, and I'm doing it more and more, and I'm trying to play less of like the screaming blue-haired videos because it's easy to do. And yes, I get it. It's funny. And okay, there's a kid who thinks he's a cat and all of that stuff. But it's like, you really should have sympathy for these people. It's not their fault they ended up this way. You know, mm-hmm. like they may have had some predisposition to it, but there was a complete societal failure. If anything, it's everyone that's 40 plus's fault that they ended up thinking they were cats and mm-hmm. thinking that abortion is healthcare and the rest of it.
And Dave, you're watching people kill themselves. Like this is what they're doing. You're watching in real time the deterioration of these people because of what's being done to them by the left. And the people I don't have sympathy are the ones, you know, the peddlers of these lies, the activists who mm-hmm. will not see another side of this issue. But for the most part, the people who are affected by this, you're watching them deteriorate in real time, ascribing to this ideology and being sold this lie. And so I think you're absolutely right. It's like, how many times are we going to laugh at the people having a mental breakdown on camera?
Right.
Because that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So is that really going to be effective at swinging votes or saving this country? Probably not. People need help. And what is the solution? Conservatives love playing defense and not offense. They're not offering many solutions to these widespread issues.
Yeah. So, all right. So help me with the conservative side of things. Because I don't consider myself a conservative, certainly in any traditional sense. I have far more in common now with conservatives, for sure. And obviously, the political map has just been completely blown apart. But Well, actually, I guess, what do you mean by conservatives per se specifically? And then, like, what is it that they could do to
Republican Party, the people who are pushing the messaging for the Republican Party, because I'm kind of in the same boat as you.
Yeah.
You know, I thought maybe I was a Republican, hardcore conservative for a little bit. And then I was like, wait, I think I'm just a normal person from like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Welcome to my
world.
But
I mostly ascribe more with them than I do the left. I think they're a little bit less crazy than the left. But I do have more hope for them than the left. I think what the left is pushing is fundamentally evil. And the right tends to be more, you know, just my liberties, whatever. And so I think they just need to be more proactive in addressing real issues like healthcare, right? They always, their only answer is, well, it's really stupid to pay for it all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it is an issue. Most Americans are one hospital trip, one medical issue away from complete bankruptcy. That's not okay.
Yeah.
It didn't used to be that way. And could you articulate any Republican stance on healthcare, on fixing it?
On fixing it? No. I mean, mostly, I mean,
it's same with student loans. Can we articulate any Republican in Congress, in Senate, their proposal for fixing it?
Right. I don't know that anything should be done about student loans, but I certainly don't think just zeroing out the loans, because it's not, when Biden gave that speech the other day and he's like, what was the word he used? I absolved the loans or whatever. And it's like, no, you didn't. You just shifted the debt elsewhere to other people to pay for it. You didn't do anything.
Well, things should probably, things should probably be undone, right? Because college used to be somewhat affordable, and then the government got involved and guaranteed a certain amount. So every university was like, well, why would we make tuition any less than the guaranteed loan amount?
Yeah.
So it really, you know, there was no regulation as it relates to these universities and upping their prices and price gouging education.
What would you say to yourself if you were 16 now about going to college and all that? I get you went to a liberal school and you came out sane, but are you seeing now that more and more young people are going to shift away from college?
I hope so. And I actually got into a back and forth with Mark Cuban about this, because I said more kids, more young adults would benefit from going to a trade school or getting their certificate.
Oh, we might have even played this on the show.
Yeah. Then going to college. And, you know, he said, well, you know, they don't know what they want to do yet. I was like, well, why would they spend $150,000 at college?
Yeah.
But I do.
You can get pot and hang out in like a overcrowded room for a lot cheaper than that. You know?
I think we just need to encourage people to just read more, to learn more, to have a love of learning that they can foster on their own. Right. Because I had a professor who told me straight up, he was one of the best philosophy professors I ever had. And he said, most people shouldn't be here and they would just benefit from a really good reading list. And he sees how, I mean, he was tenured. He saw how many kids come in and out of that room. And I think more people feel that way than they're willing to admit about college. And we've kind of sold kids this lie, but companies are moving away from it too. I think it was like 50% of companies in 2023 just removed degree requirements entirely for mid-level and entry-level positions.
We got two college dropouts in this room right now. It's pretty sweet. They're doing okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So if kids maybe get out of school a little bit, they don't get into the debt, they don't get taught bad ideas, they start understanding that their bodies are their bodies and all of those things, then that really is how we can reorder some of this stuff.
And we won't
need the government to come in and fix everything.
Autonomy.
For us.
Yeah. Because if you go back to all of that, right, like they're dependent on the medications, they're dependent on the student loans or the debt, whatever debt that may be. They're dependent on all of these things that they can't remove themselves from. There's no autonomy anymore. So I think we really just need to empower people to be autonomous.
And then we can save the world.
Hopefully.
I will ask you one other thing, because you mentioned Mark Cuban, and I've seen you go back and forth with him a couple times. What do you make of what's going on with Mark Cuban? I find him to be an extremely curious fella at the moment, between what he's getting wrong on immigration, between what he's getting wrong on DEI, what he's getting wrong about free speech. He's fighting with all the wrong people. Like, I just...
You know what he's getting wrong?
Is it just like he's a guilty billionaire? It just seems very odd.
I think he's getting one thing really, really right, and that is dialogue. Because you probably couldn't name anybody else who's that far left, who is engaging the way that he is with people. And that's what X is for, right? We should be articulating these ideas really honestly. And I really have to commend Mark for that. You know, people were circulating this clip of him 4 months ago talking about how, you know, X is just the cesspool of hate now. well, look at him. He can't get off of it.
Right.
He's on here and he's having these debates. And I really think that should be rewarded more than it is, especially on the right, because they will complain. The left doesn't want to have conversations. Well, here it is.
Right.
And they're like, you're so stupid.
Well, it is why when I've seen you respond to him and when I've responded to him and we've gone back and forth a few times, I try my best, and sometimes it can be hard on Twitter, to do it somewhat respectfully. Because yes, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you're not completely bananas. But I think you got into it with him where he was explaining what DEI was. And he's just, it seems to me, just completely confused about what it actually is rather than what he sort of imagines it to be. And then people on the right are like, you're an idiot. You don't get what has really happened here.
So if you talk to, and he's not the only one, if you talk to most of these people at these companies implementing the DEI policies, they would say the same thing. What Mark was essentially saying was, aren't all of these letters in here really good? Diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Right.
And you're like, sure, that's not how it works out, actually.
Right.
It's actually, you know, he doesn't quite understand the larger picture and, you know, the Marxist roots of DEI and what's happening here and the deliberate exclusion, the reverse racism that's happening with DEI.
And I'm still waiting for that 5'4" Asian lesbian to be the center on the Mavericks and nothing,
well,
nothing.
Kind of been put through this humiliation ritual too, you know, as it relates to these race issues. You know, he was kneeling and saying, you know, white people, it's our job. And so I think a lot of that comes from a place of wanting to be empathetic and just kind of going through this brainwashing of, you know, here's what we do, and this white guilt sentiment. Well, Mark, you're very wealthy. Well, Dave, you're very wealthy and you're white.
Yeah.
You have this, and they do make you feel guilty for it. And so I think they've kind of put him through this like humiliation washing machine where now he's like saying all these things. He's like, guys, no, I promise. this is what we have to do.
Right. Well, but I guess the reason I keep playing so many of these clips or some of the times when you've gone, had these exchanges with him, is because I can't believe at this point where now it's been so exposed, so explained, so obviously wrong that he just stays in it. But I actually get your point about why he deserves some credit there. And I think maybe that's partly why I keep covering the clips.
He's talking, and he's had very nice DMs with me as well, where he, you know, we've discussed the issues of censorship.
Oh,
and so
he slid into your DM.
No, he's married and has children. No. And, but he, you know, he talked about the censorship issue, and he's like, I would never want to do that. I would never want to censor people. So he's not as far gone of a lefty as some people make him out to be.
He'll be a Republican in 5 years. That's how now it works.
That's what we're trying to do,
that's
Dave.
Pretty
we
much
gotta,
how it works.
I have hope. I think he's redeemable.
Good talk.
Thanks for tuning in to the Rubin Report. Don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. If you're looking for early and exclusive content, you can join me on Locals at rubinreport.locals.com.